a business called Lease Loco.
Okay.
A friend of mine's just started a business called Lease Loco. Oh, hold on. We've got to start, haven't we?
We are on. We're live. So, firstly, welcome everyone to Brain Food Live on air. This is episode 19. Episode 19. We've been doing it for 19 episodes. For the new viewers that are not used to this, we are basically reviewing the Brain Food newsletter. We do that every week. And we also typically have a special topic that we want to talk about, or special guests online and so on and so forth. So it's an hour's worth of chit chat. Hopefully anybody who's interested in the Brain Food is going to be interested in what we talk about here. Anyway, I'm always joined by my co-host and Brain Food chief promoter, Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Sorry, I didn't see the countdown there when we started.
Don't worry.
I don't know why I just kept talking from the green room and kept it going. But anyway,
I think we should probably have a green room sort of behind the scenes. You know, why should we not just broadcast ahead of time? I don't mind that.
Yeah, it happened by accident.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, your beer is looking very luxurious, by the way, Adam. Have you been putting some grow fertilizer on there or something?
Nah, a couple of people have asked that. No, I've just I don't know, just letting it grow out for summer. I've got no idea.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, let's get cracking. We've got a busy show ahead. We've got an interesting kind of sort of special today. But before we dive into Mary Meeker's amazing report, let's do what we always do, which is review very quickly the Brain Food of last week. So anything in particular that caught your eye and that was interesting for us to discuss?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, unfortunately for sourcers, Facebook Graph Search is gone.
Yes.
And is this the end of access to lots of personal data straight from google.com? Yeah, it probably is. I think that it's a big shame.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the way we have to go as a society.
Yep, absolutely. I'm in the same way. For people who don't know, Facebook Graph Search was essentially a way in which you could just search 2.x billion people on Facebook. The sources that I know that are deeply technical make massive use of this. And actually, one of the most popular Chrome plugins, Intelligence Search, built by our friend Shane McCusker, which was downloaded about 150,000 times or whatever, that no longer works. And it looks like a lot of the other kind of cool things that people have built to make Facebook search a little bit easier has also now been compromised by this. So I've just shared Irina Shemaiva's report on that, but everyone looks fairly confident that it's over.
I was talking to a startup company today that have in the next 6 months got to hire 100 healthcare professionals, mostly nurses.
Yep.
And it's kind of a digital healthcare business. And they were asking, right, where are we going to start building our database from in the first place? And of course, first problem is Facebook Graph Search would have been one of the core tools for that.
Yep, absolutely. So that's a sad end to a great tool, but also, you know, this is where the arrow is pointing. And as Lee mentioned quite accurately, this is the near future that we see ahead of us. It's going to be more privacy centric, more consent driven. That's going to be massive repercussions for recruiters generally. Okay, cool. What else was interesting last week, Adam?
Well, I really like the power of hidden teams as well. So
oh, yeah.
This is effectively, you know, people that are friends inside businesses and they work on things together that actually are not, you know, governed by management. And I thought it was a Harvard Business Review kind of magic report type thing. And it happens. And it makes people and businesses more effective. If only they could understand how to really, you know, harness it more.
You know what? The key takeaway for me on that was the importance of proximity. Like people talk about culture and they have this old company culture. You know, Unilever has a company culture. Well, Unilever's got 300,000 people working for it. That is not a unified culture. What's far more important is actually the people that you're sitting next to day on, day out, people you interact with. You know, the people you message more than anybody else,
their
behaviors and their contributions and their kind of competencies are really going to be the things that determine your feeling with regards to that business. So yeah, it's about teams and proximate teams as well.
Yeah, it is. It's about. It's also slightly contrary to this concept of remote working as well, because, you know, if you, I mean, you definitely see it. You see more innovation happening in certain offices of different companies that are meant to have the same kind of culture, and there's an agglomeration effect as people kind of come together, and ideas just happen more when they are together. So
you just learned that word agglomeration recently, didn't you, Adam?
I didn't, but
I heard the way you just kind of mangled the pronunciation a little bit. I thought, Adam's learned a new word there.
No, it was a couple of years. I learned it actually in a TV program all about London a few years ago, and how London is creating so much innovation because people are coming and, you know, from all over the world to make better things happen together.
Agglomeration, by the way, for people who are not in the know, there's the Wikipedia definition. It's literally, it's something about, hey, listen, network effect, right? More means more. But yeah, you know what? It's there's another way to think about proximity, though. Remote teams, sometimes proximity can be about relationship with the function. So for instance, you and I could be sitting next to a sales director, sort of a financial director, let's say, but functionally we're not very proximate. So actually, that's going to be less important. And there's other ways in which you can measure proximity, actually. There's a really good article I should pull out at some point, but I'll do that at some other stage.
I mean, things like Slack make it happen. You know, they really do, because and WhatsApp makes it happen. You know, I mean, I've got a group of like about 20 friends from school, and there's probably six of us in one WhatsApp group, and we do more things together just because we're in the WhatsApp group. So
there's no doubt. I mean, I used to have an old friend of mine who was one of the last ever holdouts against technology. So I'm old enough to know friends that literally, you know, had the first mobile phone. Anyway, this guy refused to have mobile phones, like way beyond the time where everyone else had a mobile phone.
Yeah.
You know, the argument was won, I think, around, you know, at least the early noughties, everyone had a phone, right? This guy, he was phoneless until about 2010.
I've got one who was only about 5 years ago.
I fell out of touch with him. I mean, I could not continue to. It was so hard to arrange anything with this guy because you had to pre-plan everything. You couldn't change anything. It would be locked in because Andy didn't have a mobile phone. Yeah. And it's like, okay, taught me a lesson there, is that no matter what you feel about technology and whatnot, you kind of do have to jump on a bandwagon once it's clear it's a bandwagon, because you're going to miss out if you don't. So anyway, Andy, how are you doing? I hope you're all right. I'll give you a call after this show.
I'll send you some smoke signals.
He has a phone now. It's fine. I'll give him a ring. All right. So what else is interesting, Adam?
Well, you mentioned the company already, Unilever. So the article all about how Unilever uses artificial intelligence to recruit. So I find it quite interesting when recruitment related subjects make it kind of more mainstream.
Yes.
So this was in Forbes. And I mean, I think it's great the way that Unilever is doing this, although it's not unusual.
No, like, it wasn't spectacular innovation. No. They're just using two tools that we both know and respect, Pi Metrics to do psychometric testing and Hire View to do the video interviewing. So fairly straightforward stuff.
Mainstream.
However, their scale is amazing, right? So the numbers they're talking about were ridiculous. 70,000 person hours saved in terms of interviewing. That's incredible.
It is. And it just shows that, you know, the people, I was talking to somebody like a couple of days ago, and I said, my at the recruitment tech showcase in London, in fact, and I said, my measurement of how effective a recruitment agency is, if I walk in and the person's doing the same job that I was doing in 1999, they haven't progressed, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, it's if not a problem now, it will certainly be in the near future, which is what we're going to talk about. The big piece for us today, folks, no guests, and no special sort of people jumping on screen. It's going to be me and Adam and one massive slide deck from a lady called Mary Meeker. So if you don't know Mary Meeker, she is a venture partner at Bond Capital now, formerly with Klein and Perkins. And she basically has, for a very long time, produced the slide deck. I think it's always on sort of at the end of May or something, second of June, something of this type. But it's a massive slide deck which basically tracks the internet trends year in, year out. She released it, and Adam and I both read this thing and thought, you know what, let's just chew through this and see what the impact for us in recruitment really is going to be. So I'm going to try and do something we've never done before, which is actually share screen. I wonder whether that's actually possible to do. Turns out it isn't. Oh, it is.
No, it works. It works. I did it a couple of days ago.
Let me do this. I'm going to try and share her thing here so that people watching can actually see what we're trying to do. So I think that's the screen there, isn't it?
So before we get into the content, can I make two comments about it?
Yeah, please do.
So the actual content itself is magnificent. So I'm not gonna talk about that first. Two things first. Trying to read this file on a mobile phone was a very, very torturous experience.
Yep, no doubt.
That's the first one. Really, really difficult to use. And then the second comment is, I really wish they'd made it a bit nicer. I mean, I could personally have done a better design job on this slide deck. And Leonardo da Vinci.
No, you know what? I think you're right. But at the same time, I kind of like her lo-fi style. And I've actually adopted it for a couple of slide decks that I've done recently, because I thought, you know what? Let's just go with the data, go with the content, and leave the flashy graphics off. But you're right. It does look dated, doesn't it? I mean, the design of it is like, okay, they could probably give this a UX go over. But at the same time, I think she's almost deliberately saying, you know what? It is about the content. So, I mean, let's just crack through this, I reckon. Now, there's 11 points here. We can't go through every slide, so we're going to have to whistle through. Yeah. But let's talk about these main things that she's referring to here. Yeah. And we'll just go through it. People who are watching on screen can join us with this. Feel free to put your comments in as well. We'll try and address them as they go. Okay, let's do the first one. Skip through this. We're talking about internet users.
Yeah.
And I think the main point that Mary mentioned here was that we kind of, the user growth is sort of slowing down because we're achieving market penetration. Like almost everyone is on the internet. Or I think in this kind of world, it's something like half the planet. So internet penetration in 2018 on this slide is 51% of the global population, which... That's an astonishing figure, isn't it? Still some ways to go. But, you know, what are the implications of this for us in recruiting when you've got a large percentage of the world's population already online?
Well, I mean, I think that the first thing is, just over 50% of people for the first time are now on the internet. You'd think that was great. But the fact that the further growth is actually really hard to find. I was really, really interested in the fact that Asia Pacific makes up, you know, a huge proportion of the amount of people that are actually on the internet.
Yes.
You know, what was it, say 52% or something of the global internet users are in Asia Pacific. And I think in terms of the countries, of the top four countries, it was China, India, USA, and Indonesia. The you know, countries most populated on the internet are in Asia. Pretty interesting.
I think what this tells us is actually we are in a little bit of a bubble, aren't we? Because we talk about, you know, recruitment in a very universal way, but in fact there's huge markets that certainly I don't address, and probably none of us really watching this address. India, China alone, those two countries represent something like 2/3 of the world's population. And they are starting to adopt technology. They're starting to get into the internet. What they do is going to have massive impact in terms of where, you know, the world is going to go. So, you know, my big learning on this is that we've been in the microcosm, we've been in that Western world, the metropolitan centers and so on, but there's huge swathes of the planet that we're not addressing. Like, I'd love to know more about how you recruit in China. What are the challenges of recruiting in India? No idea. I'd love for anybody watching this or listening to this on the podcast to maybe be able to pop in and have a word with us at some point on this.
So I think that the fact that there still is big growth opportunity in Asia Pacific, and I do. When I think about my own customers, for example, it's you know, it's almost all North America and Europe, where the internet usage is very, very high. So there's not going to be an awful lot of growth left in North America at 89%. I'm not sure if this includes kids, but if this includes kids, then that's basically every adult. It will be every adult, pretty much, that's including there. Whereas in Asia Pacific, it's still 48%.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of growth there. But the other aspect to this was, I noticed, which was really interesting, the number of smartphones sold last year was 4% down the year before.
Yeah. Okay.
Now that could have been, and however, mobile usage accounts for most of the growth.
Yeah.
Most of this internet growth is coming from smartphones.
Well, I think the smartphone thing is simply because people have already got the phone, right? I mean, we're renewing phones less because they've got so expensive. And if you're an iPhone, you want to do an annual renewal, it's going to cost you £1,000. You can't do that every year. We're getting to the point where I think this is the reason also why, you know, Apple has really pivoted to services recently, because they recognize that people can't simply afford the hardware. And maybe it's not a sustainable model, you know, to keep asking people to do that. So, yeah, I think the world is definitely changing in many respects in this regard. Check out the slide that's on screen now, Adam. Global internet market capitalization leaders. These are the biggest companies on the planet. All of them are tech. I can't even – I'm looking down on this. I'm trying to spot – it is about internet business. I do beg your pardon.
It's all internet businesses.
Yeah,
Your slide hasn't changed on the screen here.
Really?
Not for me anyway. I've still got the global internet users.
Oh, I tell you why that is. I probably need to go back here and try that. How does this look now?
Ivan's point, just before moving on, Ivan's point is absolutely right about Africa being the key for growth for many organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Look at the internet usage on there. It's a long way to go. I know the slide while you're bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
The internet market cap leaders. So for the first, Microsoft's market capitalization at $1 trillion really stands out. But then beneath that, it's almost all. It's almost all American businesses. So we've got Microsoft followed by Amazon, Apple, Alphabet, Facebook, top five, all of them US businesses. There we go. We're on there now. And then the next two Chinese, the Alibaba and Tencent, which is quite interesting. With you've gone on to the global market cap leaders. So this is the one that comes after that, which is all companies. But on that, you can see it's practically all technology businesses.
Yeah.
On there, the only one I think in the top 10 that's not really a tech company is Berkshire Hathaway. It's an investment company. Visa, I would argue, is a tech business.
Yeah.
As much as it is a financial services company. And Johnson & Johnson may well be a consumer products business, but you know, it's becoming a lot of tech services and things like that in that business as well. So becoming very, very tech enabled.
Absolutely. And it's the top five, right? The top four, and you throw Facebook in amongst that lot. I mean, they're just hugely powerful businesses, and how they, you know, decide or determine how the internet goes is going to affect every single one of those. It's fascinating how dominant tech is. You know, it's a big part of the reason for us in recruiting why, you know, technology is the dominant segment when we're looking at recruiting still. So, the trends are very clear for us to see there. Okay, let's whistle through this. Talking about all this market cap. What about online advertising? What did Mary Meek have to say about this? Because she's talking about, hey, listen, have we peaked on online advertising? Is it a case that we've kind of got to a point where we've got market saturation on it? People are not responding to advertising in the same way that they used to.
Well, yeah, I mean, growth is still steady, but it is slowing a little bit. There you go, 12.1% versus 12.4% at the beginning of last year. I mean, I think that, you know, there's still been a massive growth of mobile ad spend. There is still a lot of growth there. It's just not quite as big. But that's, of course, going to be completely in line with the fact that the global internet usage. Number of new global internet users is not, going up as fast as it was as well. So it's kind of like logical.
Here's a question for you. With the movement of, and this refers to one of the last things that we talked about on Brainfood last week, with the kind of the backlash against a big tech and the movement towards privacy by the likes of Facebook and Google, two of the most dominant kind of ad tech type businesses around. Are we at the point where we think that we've peaked in terms of online ads? I mean, recruitment advertising is part of that mix.
No, I mean, I really don't think so. I think there's a trend, which is we're not going to continue to have years of continued massive growth, but we've definitely not peaked, especially if you look at Asia Pacific. And I agree with Lee. I still think that the big opportunity, actually, despite what Ivan said, I still think that the biggest opportunity still remains Asia Pacific. But it's going to keep seriously growing. And what might be impacted by this, however, is real personalized targeting. So I was talking to another company earlier today, and I said to them, the types of people that you're trying to hire, Facebook knows every one of them. Facebook knows who they are. You can get to every single one of them through Facebook. You can probably get to almost all of them through Google as well. So hyper-personalized advertising has been giving people a better internet experience. So it's the trade-off between, do I want a better internet experience, or am I happy to have really random things coming in my direction at the expense of my, for safeguarding my privacy?
That's the trade-off, man. And I remember the era before Facebook and personalization. If you remember the old Alta Vista search engines and all that type of stuff, the web was an absolute mess. Every time you go to a single page, there'll be like hundreds of different messages coming at you from all kinds of saturation advertising. And it was absolutely horrible. And the reason
it was the equivalent of Lidl being online.
Right. I would even give Lidl more credit. I mean, at least they've got some consistency in their shelving strategy, right?
Well, you can buy a watermelon next to a wetsuit is what
I would actually liken it more to a Chinese grocer, where you walk in, it's overstocked, it's just blizzard of products thrown at you. And it's just, every single page was a confusing experience. So I think that, privacy obviously is important, but I do think that we've probably pushed maybe overly hard on this, and it may not be overly bad for these companies to actually have a little bit more information about us, particularly about what we like to and what we're interested in.
It is. Look, I get Facebook's a much more entertaining place for me than it was 5 years ago. It's as simple as that. You get more thing, you get more suggestions. I mean, even Twitter's kind of promoted tweets are all really quite relevant today. This time, even last year, they weren't. Just really quickly want to pick up on Ivan's point. Online retail accounts for only 10% of the market. I think that's a slightly different thing. And interestingly, if you look at the United States, should we come on to that later around e-commerce? Are we still on advertising or?
No, we can just pile on. Let's not be chained to the slide deck per se. If there's something that one of the commentators wants to discuss, let's dive into that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, if you look at the United States, for example, e-commerce accounts for only 15% of total retail spend. But the reason for that is because there's 350 million people, 380 million people, whatever it is, spread across a continent that's twice the size of Europe. So that's why it's so much easier to use things like, Amazon for your to deliver your shopping and to deliver items you want, and Tesco to deliver your shopping. The opportunity in somewhere like US is not the same. It's very, very high. It's much higher in a lot of parts of Asia Pacific than it is in the US, for example.
Yeah, and I think, what does that percent mean? I mean, is it percentage of the absolute number, currency value of sales? Because that doesn't actually surprise me if that is the case, simply because if you monitor your own online purchasing behavior, it's usually a trivial thing that you buy online. You go and buy like a £20, £30, £10 type of product. But you know, you not make a massive purchase online. You're still gonna, if you're buying a car, you're gonna want to see it. Or if you're gonna buy a house, you're definitely gonna visit it. So that number still seems big to me. 15% looks like a decent and probably, you know, an appropriate number.
But then I also noticed later in this report that digital payments account for 59% of all spend. Now, it didn't say on the slide if that was USA or if that was of total.
That's credit cards, though. I reckon that's non-cash transactions, right?
I'm not sure if that's credit cards. I think that was things like wearables and peer-to-peer and things like that.
Let's check that out. I'd be surprised if it's 50. But if you throw in the idea of credit cards, then absolutely. Cash purchasing, cash is like on its way out. Everyone knows that.
I didn't think a credit card was considered a digital payment. I don't think it is, and I don't think it was. It was a remarkable statistic, anyway.
Yeah, we can look into that. All right, we're actually talking about online advertising here. This might actually be a reasonable slide. We're looking at this is really about mobile versus desktop, isn't it? I mean, we all know that mobile is in terms of spend has been huge. Although, interestingly enough, man, I've got to be honest, I react very badly to mobile ads, you know.
I prefer not to use mobile, but I end up using it all the time. It's just too small and it's sore on your hands holding a phone the whole time.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, whatever ad that's on my mobile phone, I'm really annoyed at it because it's usually when I pick up the phone, I've got a specific action I want to execute on. I'm not just staring randomly at the phone. When you get an interrupt with an advert or an autoplay or something like that, it's just so annoying. I'm just waiting to be able to fast forward and get rid. So I think people are spending money on it, but I wonder what the return to investment really is going to be on there. But anyway, it tracks very much to time spent, doesn't it? So you can see more people spend time on mobile, more ad dollars will flow towards it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit dangerous, isn't it? Because you've basically got a shopping device just in your hand all the time. So, you know, unfortunately, the ease of use, the ease of consumerism is also pretty dangerous. There's more people going into debt than there ever have been, into crippling debt than there ever have been. And I do blame Instagram for that a lot. But anyway,
I know you hate Instagram. I totally get it. But you know what? It's also got to do with the fact that credit is easy, right? Anybody can get a credit card and anybody can just max it out. The spice will flow, as they say.
One other thing about this in terms of online advertising, I found it really interesting that Google's grown by, in the last year, 2017 to 18, grew by 40%, Facebook by 90%. But then Amazon, and it listed a couple of other random ones like Pinterest.
Where is this here? Okay.
Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2.6 times, which I thought was really interesting that some of these others are growing a lot more than Google has over the period.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen. I'm surprised at Amazon, but definitely with regards to the mobile only type of products like Snap and Instagram's kind of mobile only. I can absolutely see that tracking with the usage of it, it's absolutely dominant how Facebook and Google are determining what people see to buy, good or bad. But they have the data, right? And they have the users, so it makes sense to double down with those guys.
Yeah, I also found it interesting that programmatic actually now accounts for 62% of all display advertising. There we go, we've got it here.
Yeah,
62% is programmatically bought, which is fine. I mean, I'm guessing that's mostly big businesses, and the 38% are amateurs.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you have to say programmatic is simply superior, right? I mean, you get a cheaper and more cost control method of getting value. So it's great to see programmatic move into the jobs ad space. I mean, there's a couple of good players in the field already, isn't there? I'm not massively familiar with the territory, so I'm gonna have to do probably worth doing a Brainview Live on this. But you know, we know the ClickIQ guys very well. There's a couple of others from the Netherlands that are kind of reasonably prominent in Europe as well.
It's real time bidding. So it's all about making sure that your advertising budget is spent at the right time in the right places. And it's all algorithm. It's not that new, but it's maybe become a lot more effective over the last couple of years, and that's why it's much more prominent. I mean, it's like 10 programmatic's been going for 10 years.
And has it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Companies like, so my wife used to work for Kara.
Okay.
And they were doing programmatic 10 years ago. They were using tools that did it.
Right. Well, I don't know anything about that. But my knowledge gaps here are really massive. So I need to take a deeper dive. But I think overall programmatic is probably a good thing in recruitment, simply because imagine being a recruiter trying to make these on-the-spot decisions as to where to spend your advertising budget. You know, what chance have you got of getting that right? You're going to go on past experience or whatever it is that you might have, and you're going to be wasting a lot of money. So I think it's a good thing that tech has come in really to take that part of the job away.
Yeah, so listen, Stephen's made a good point about, so the thing about credit cards, it's a bit different in the US. Young people don't tend to take credit cards, by the sounds of things. They're more likely to be taking student debt than credit card debt. And not everyone can get a credit card. I think they still can in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there's going to be local differences, isn't there? I think the US general use of cards is I find strange. You know, there's lots of places that would refuse credit cards still, don't they, for payment. And there's still a lot of cash-only joints as well, I've seen. So different businesses, different territories have different ways to do those transactions, really.
So the slide that you were just on a second ago, that was one of my favorites. So this is some of the reasons for advertising, getting better. So the... audience customization on Facebook is an example. Time edited clips and like YouTube knows how long you're going to spend watching something, and it just automatically clips it at the right point. Being able to buy things on Pinterest now, and as I mentioned earlier about promoted tweets. So yeah. I think all of these products are getting better at finding ways to monetize their audiences. And I think they're all giving better services to customers as a result. The two have to happen.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, that's basically Mary Meeker's view as well. I think she's pretty much pro ad tech, in the sense that she thinks at the end of the day, the customer is going to see less irrelevant information, and more relevant stuff that should, and this will get better. But there's going to be obviously legal constraints to this. And if we go too far down the pro-privacy route, then, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to go away. We're just going to get bombarded again, even more so than we are now. But, you know, it's a trade-off. I think we've just got to try and figure out which part of it is worth trading off on.
So can we just quickly talk about these trends that were on? Sorry, back to the slide you were on. And okay. just put them in the context of recruitment here. So... in terms of targeting and audience customization, fine, we're doing that. Products like you mentioned, ClickIQ, you know, they're absolutely doing that. We're not doing an awful lot around YouTube in recruitment yet. We're not doing an awful lot around advertising, getting into people's YouTube videos. Is that because the cost of production, you know, video production's high? Is it because we're just not creative enough yet in recruitment? Is it because we want people looking at video that is on our career site? But we're not very good at positioning adverts into potential candidates' YouTube feeds.
Yeah, we use video differently, I think. In recruitment, video typically is employer brand related. So quite high production value, usually longer term. So the half-life of a video you produce, you know, you probably want to think, right, it's going to last for a year at least. Whereas job ads, it's very disposable fare. So I think maybe it's got something to do with the idea that, as you mentioned, it's too high a production cost. It takes too long to get it done. And you know, we if we do produce a video, it's going to be, you know, the one thing we do, and we get, try and get long-term value off it. But you're right. I wonder whether it is possible to create something a bit more interesting for, you know, your targeted individuals on YouTube to consume. Definitely, you can tell what the person's interested in because he's watching the video.
Yeah, they know what they've liked. They know exactly what you are, and absolutely. Stephen's coughed on the side there, so I'm interested to know. So Stephen O'Donnell works for Video My Job. I'm interested to know if your company is getting video into people's YouTube ads. I don't know anybody that's doing it in recruitment.
Yep, I'm sure that there's a few, but Video My Job, for people who don't know, I would try and share the link to that. If someone can do it onto this chat, that'd be great.
So David, it's not about video job ads. So there's lots of businesses doing brilliant video job ads. It's about getting them slotted into. I want to watch a Manic Street Preachers video. Click on the video, but first comes up a 10-second. Here's what it's like to work for Royal Bank of Scotland.
Yeah, and you can do lots of correlations there. Like we know, for instance, certain people who subscribe to certain types of YouTube channel are more likely to be technical people. For instance, let's say you've got a learning video on how to code, you know, Java or something, pretty much that person's going to be a developer at junior level. So if you're hiring for those folks, makes sense for you to stick an ad in there. The targeting on YouTube must be better than almost every other platform. But you're right. I personally don't see too much of it. But then Stephen says
they've got boosted promotion to demographics via YouTube and Facebook. All right. I've never seen a job ad on YouTube, but fair it is.
Yep. I mean, maybe something we need to get educated on. Who knows?
Listen, Liz has asked a question in the Q&A. Liz, can I just say, ask questions on the side chat just so it doesn't get missed, because ironically, nobody looks in the Q&A for these questions. But she said, is there anyone that you think is nailing it with online recruitment advertising? I'm going to throw that back to you, Liz, and ask you to be more specific, because it's too big an area for us to cover, I think, on this.
Someone should put up a top 10 list on that, but right now, not on the top of our heads, I think. All right, we've got to move on. Let's just fly through this part here, because we have a massive slide deck, let's not forget.
One thing, which is not really a recruitment thing, but customer acquisition costs. There's a slide, really poignant one. You just slip. Yeah, customer acquisition costs can't exceed LTV for the long term. And what that shows is that cost of acquisition is just too high. It's really, really high. Companies are going to end up bust left, right, and center unless they get this a little bit more scalable.
Well, this is where sort of the things like, everyone's talking about Spotify as the exemplar, and probably Netflix as well, as the two big subscription players that have really worked. Spotify in particular, give away a free service, but you festoon it with ads, and eventually people migrate to a small monthly model of, you know, 10 quid a month. I mean, people would pay that to go ad-free experience. And you can see here the subscription shooting up northeast. My own personal experience, I've got to be honest with you, I did some big migration of my utilities bills this week. And, you know, after gas and electricity, Spotify was right there. You know, it's like, I need to have this. So, I think they've got it nailed as a very unique exemplar.
Mine. I've got a bunch on mine. I've got Amazon Prime. I've got Sky Go. I've got Blinkist, Spotify. I'm paying small amounts of money every month for all of them. And I probably started off with all of them on something free. In fact, I just signed up. Like, I really want to get out of it, actually. But I signed up to watch one rugby match on a Premium Sports. I think it's Premier Sports. And I've got it on my phone now. And to be honest, I have watched a couple of other things on it. And it might only be one thing a month I watch on it, but I'm going to keep paying for it, probably.
What's the recruitment application sort of analogy there? Is there a service that does that where it's a very low consumer level?
They've just never worked. There's job search organizers, there's career management organizers, and they haven't scaled. If you go onto Talent Tech Labs ecosystem, mm-hmm. there's a couple of consumer sort of bubbles on there. But there's nothing that you would know as a like household name even within recruitment technology.
I tell you why that is because job search is too episodic an activity. We're not doing it day in, day out.
It's an ephemeral thing.
Yeah, so I think where we will find something that's useful is mental health stuff, productivity stuff, like where people have a persistent need for some sort of improvement that related to work. Then I think that we might see some sort of freemium Spotify-like model emerge. But right now, if it's about job search, look, if you need to use this every month for X amount of months, probably you're going to run out of cash at some point, I guess. And if you found a job, you're probably going to switch it off. You know, you're not going to persist on keeping it alive.
Well, shout out to Helios, which is a company that I got introduced to earlier today. And they're doing absolutely that. It's digital healthcare, and you know these kinds of things are going to be offered as they already are being offered as employee benefits. That's the word that went in my
head. Yeah. So maybe that's also a route in. Like instead of going B2C, you go B2B2C. You sell the service to an employer and the employer cascades it down to the employees and says, look, here you go.
Gympass is another good example.
Gympass.
Ivan's asked how much I'd pay for Brain Food. Hung, the answer is if you want to set me up on a direct debit, it's fine. Like, I don't know, £20 a month. It's fine.
You know what? That's great that you say, and people have been pressuring me to do this. You know, strangely enough, they're saying, "Hung, why don't you start charging readers for it?" And I'm thinking, you know what? I could do that, but I don't want to. And here's the reason why not. Because I'll create two tiers of readers then. There'll be people who are underpaid and the people who aren't paid. And what do I do? The freemium model tells me I should give more value to the paying guys, which of course, you know, this is how it works. But then I've divided the audience. I'd much rather have a unified group so everyone gets the same stuff and everyone gets the same level playing field. You know, I might do something subscription at some point, but right now it's working fine with ad support and sponsor support. So we'll roll on that until I run out of money, basically.
I'll start charging people for Brain Food online just on the side.
Well, I'm not going to allow you to do that. but yeah, we'll do some sponsors on here as well. Okay, we're back to this privacy thing, but I want to skip past the ads because there's other stuff we need to talk about. We've got this massive sort of slide deck to go through. We're back onto usage again. The average daily hour spent on digital media per adult user in USA, what is it?
6.3 a day.
That's a lot of waiting time. That's a lot of waking time, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, imagine what I'm probably three, but then I need to get that app that tells you how much you're.
Yeah, you're on more than that. I think you work in tech. Everyone watching this right now is on tech. So if you imagine the amount of times you're awake and not got something, not a screen in line of sight, that's going to be when you're cooking something. People are taking their mobile phones to the toilet. Everyone does that. Every activity that you can think of that we would do, we more or less have phone to hand almost always. So that doesn't actually surprise me that much. It's almost like when you're eating something or when you're cooking something and you need two hands, essentially that's the time when you're not actually on screen.
I didn't think that this meant time on the screen. I thought this meant time consuming. I thought digital media was specifically meaning consuming some kind of information like podcasts and videos and things like that, as opposed to time on a screen. Because yes, if it includes, in my case, putting presentations together, then it's going to be 6.3. But
right, okay.
Digital media meant specifically consuming like media.
Right. Well, I can't read the small print on the footer there, so you might be right. The point of the matter is, the main point here is that obviously...
it's going up.
Yeah. It's going up year in year as we go. Okay. Let's move on to this. We're talking about innovation, online...
Well, that one. Time. Right, that one, the one you were just on there. So the
back
amount
here?
Of time, yeah, the amount of time, the one before that, yeah. The amount of time people spend on a mobile versus watching television has just crossed over. Mobile's now higher.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
isn't it? Yeah, it's remarkable. And all these television executives who have been slow off the mark have really missed out. You know, they've gone the way of the dodo.
Yep, absolutely. Remember those massive TV companies that used to dominate? I remember back in the day when German companies like Grundig and stuff like that, right?
That's
they
right,
went by the wayside. The Japanese and the South Koreans and the Taiwanese wiped them out. But then you've got massive problems with the likes of Panasonic and Samsung's TV business and stuff like this. Samsung will survive it, given their mobile side. They could probably do something integrated, but I'd be very surprised if anybody else is still in good shape as a major TV manufacturer. People simply don't watch it anymore, right?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Here's a nice little slide. Internet users per platform. And you can see a slight dip on Facebook, which, you know, everyone knows that's probably true. Post Cambridge Analytica, etc. But YouTube
and Instagram, the two highest. Yeah.
And you notice that WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook Messenger, Facebook are still in great shape. You add up all of those businesses and properties that they own. Generally speaking, they're still dominating in terms of what people gravitate to and what they want to use.
Three of the top five, they are all owned by Facebook.
Yeah.
WeChat, I wonder why the decline in users.
Good
because
point.
I would have thought that WeChat would have been going significantly up because the amount of people online in China is going up considerably.
I wonder whether that's got something to do with the emergence of other Chinese social networks, like ByteDance, for instance. They're not on here, but apparently ByteDance crossed 1 billion users this week. And that's like, what is going on there? 1 billion, that's huge. That's more than just China. That's a lot of people in the Western world as well. It could well be losing market share to some of these even more mobile and even kind of more weird social networks, really. So video watching time. We got to fly through. Let's go. Short form video. What are we doing in recruitment with short form video? Anybody doing anything interesting here?
Yeah, loads. Absolutely loads. Loads of people doing short videos on LinkedIn and other social networks, short videos on career sites. Double growth in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly the best way of doing things. You've got sites like TikTok emerging where it's only short video is the only thing it does.
Yep.
I can see why this is becoming. And then things like Instagram stories, Facebook stories, they're all considered short video as well. So,
You know what? I love short videos because you're asking very little cognitively from the people getting it. Nothing to read. They just got to sit back and consume this 30-second thing. And most people are able to do that. Recruiters definitely need to make use of this. And I'm not just talking about branding videos, but I've got into the habit of sending video notes to people. I don't know whether you do this, Adam, but I'm addicted to it.
I've had some from you.
Yeah, that's it. It's like I've stopped calling people because I don't want a synchronous conversation. Thank you very much. What the hell is that? Actually, there was a friend of mine I had spoke to 2 weeks ago, and it was actually a phone call, like an audio-only phone call synchronously. And that shocked me and it terrified me a little bit because I thought, when's the last time I ever had one of those things? I wasn't confident about handling it. So I think recruiters definitely can make use of these asynchronous video messaging, short notes, short form, 30, 60 seconds, something like that. I think it's going to be a really good way to engage with people who've always been mobile first.
Listen, let me tell you about Odro, a good Glasgow business.
Yeah, of course, right. I know those boys. Yeah,
Odro is a great business, and they've just had a serious spike in new customers, and they've done it because they are giving you the opportunity to just send a link straight into somebody's inbox on LinkedIn, and I think just I don't know if it's launched yet, but it's about to be launched by email as well. Just it takes you 15 seconds to say why you want to talk to the person, click where do you want to send it, through LinkedIn, through email, sent. The person's much more likely to watch a video of you talking to them for 15 seconds than read your cut and paste message, because it's not a cut and paste video.
Yep. Exactly. One of the things about the messaging is that you can guarantee personalization almost. I mean, if I went to send you a video and say, hey, Adam, you know, we're not at the deep fake stage yet where recruiters are able to fake that and personalize it in the same mail merge way that you can do with text. So I think, yeah, good on those boys. I haven't spoke to Ryan for a long time, actually. But yeah, Glasgow's got some good tech going these days, don't they? It's going well.
He was messaging me to ask me if I'd read a book that he sent me at the weekend. He sent me a book through the post at the weekend. And he was messaging me on Tuesday morning to ask me if I... And then what did we do? Bang, Glasgow Airport. Practically walked straight into each other.
The Glasgow Mafia. The Glasgow Mafia. All right, let's move on. Podcasts. Are you running a podcast? I certainly am. Everyone is running a podcast. A great way to connect with, again, opt-in kind of subscribers, right? I think this is another fantastic channel for recruiters to get involved in. And I'm very pleased to see actually the big list of recruitment podcasts. I don't know whether you know about that. But that has now, I think, got to 100 podcasts now, which is a real result. You know, these are all of the podcasts that basically people have volunteered to say, hey, listen, this is worth listening to. So I'll just share that very quickly to the group here. Feel free to take a look at the big list. And if you run a podcast that's not on that list and you want it to be on there, please add it to the end of that spreadsheet.
You know, Lee's got a point here. So podcasts are great, but is there an overabundance of them? I mean, the important one, the ones that people want to read, people listen to, they're the ones that rise to the top and they're the ones that generate all the followers. So my favorites are Matt Alder's Recruiting Futures and Chad and Cheese.
Yeah, my favorite too as well. Brilliant podcast, different style, but perfect. I tell you, there's a couple of other good ones as well. I love Laurie Ruderman's Let's Fix Work. She's a brilliant interviewer. Also more about productivity and HR as well as recruiting.
Yeah, Glenn Southam's Lonely Marketer.
Yep, I've never heard that, but I really respect what Glenn does. I tell you who else has started a podcast I think is well worth listening to, Lars Schmidt. You know, he does like a 20-minute per episode, which is perfect. You're not sitting there for an hour. Again, another good one. I would actually dispute what Lee said in the sense that, yes, there's a lot out there, but it's up to you to choose. You can ignore it all if you want. You know, it's like people will eventually find the ones that you like. It's like YouTube. Are there too many YouTubers? Well, yes, they are. But the result of that is that there's a very rich ecosystem you can go and investigate and, you know, get your kink on if you want. So
again, on Lee, another point of Lee's, but do you have the time to listen to all the podcasts you want to? Again, no, the answer is, I could spend all my day on YouTube every single day. You know, let alone all the podcasts and things. So you've got to choose. You've got to be protective of your time.
Yeah, you got to protect your time. I'll tell you another thing as well. Lee's actually mentioned a very interesting point, because there is a competition for these subscribers. You might subscribe to 100 podcasts, but actually you only listen to 2 or 3. Well, if you do and you're one of those 2 or 3, actually, you're in a very strong position, because that person is unlikely to pivot off your cast unless you do something terrible or you get boring or something else happens. So you've got this captured audience. So I think that is the same with newsletters. That's the same with Brain Food, for instance. Lots of people do newsletters these days. I think amazing, gives people lots of choice. But it's almost like there's a gold rush scenario. The sooner you get in there, the better.
I don't see very many people putting together, you know, I don't see very many increased number of newsletters, however. That's a good thing for brain food, I think.
No, I disagree. And I think actually Mary Mika talks about this. Let's see whether she has a slide on this. I don't think she does. Newsletters.
Just really quickly back to the podcasts. Ben Shapiro's podcast, number 9. I'd be really interested to know how many people subscribe to that because they really want to hear what he says, because they really like what he says, versus the people that really want to hear what he says because they really dislike what he says. Would be quite interesting to know.
It would be, and it's kind of polarizing. The truths of marketing, right? I think Mika mentioned this at the very end. It's much better to be polarizing than to be boring. So, I mean, you can argue Joe Rogan experience is the same way. You know, people who with a strong opinion, they're going to get listens. I mean, that's probably part of the problem we have.
So, Ivan, I didn't say the animal show because I don't really consider that a podcast. I think that's a radio show.
I agree. It's a podcast in the same. I mean, it's a radio show rather than a podcast. It's similar to what we do here, even though we do transcribe it into a podcast later on. But yeah, it's a call-in. You know, it's a call-in radio show. All right, voice tech. Obviously, that goes northeast. Everyone knows about that. Everyone's got an Alexa or a Google Home or a Google Assistant of some type. Do people know that Google have got into the house building business and they're integrating Alexa into their house building? So you know, no stopping Bezos. He knows what he's doing. He's gonna get the connected home.
Yeah, he's gonna have chips in our brains on birth.
Yeah, amazing. And we're doing very little with voice tech. If people are interested, by the way, you should follow a friend of ours called Oscar Mega, who is kind of taking upon himself to really study where voice tech is going. And he's a chap. Whoever knows Oscar, please send through his LinkedIn URL there for the crowd. Give him a follow because he's currently he's working at Sonos right now. But he's really studying where voice tech is going. He's got some really interesting insights there as well.
Just in case, one really quick thing, just in case anybody's not aware, but on LinkedIn, on the LinkedIn app, you can just go straight in and send your voice message.
Yes, you can do that as well. People are horrified by it. I mentioned Laurie Ruderman, but Laurie tweeted out, I think yesterday, she was horrified at receiving such a thing. And I totally get it. It's a bit weird. But at the same time, you know, you can multitask with the voice message, right? You can click play.
They're getting better results from their LinkedIn sourcing as a result.
That's it. I'm as a sourcer and outreacher, I think this is a good thing to try and do.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to fly through the banking stuff. What about this? I love this one here. We're talking about
images.
Images over text, right?
Memes.
And Meek is talking about how historically we've always used images, and text is actually quite a recent innovation. So we're really kind of going back to the past with the use of emojis and the use of those types of things. So amazing how this is happening.
I think I told you this, Hung, recently. Our friend John Stanners, he predicted to me about 3 years ago that we will not be using text at all in the future and we'll be communicating in emojis, and which is effectively a throwback to hieroglyphics.
Yep, absolutely. It communicates more. I mean, it perhaps doesn't have the precision, but it communicates the emotion, which is actually what we want to do. If you think about what great authors are able to do, they're able to communicate emotion through a medium of text, which is emotionless. But they're able to generate that emotion in you. So that's where their skill comes from. However, with emojis and stuff like that, I can transmit that emotion to you. Or with a funny GIF or something, I can make you feel that way without the necessary skill. So
listen, you picked me up on agglomeration earlier. You're not American, so why are you calling it a GIF? It's definitely a GIF. It is a GIF and not a GIF.
It's actually by the guy who created the GIF. He says it's GIF. So I'm calling.
Oh, you're kidding, really?
There's a video on him. He's actually said that.
He doesn't know how to pronounce his own acronym.
Yeah, he's stopped thinking it's a big deal. But for me, I'm going with the founder here. You know, if it's just me and him talking about GIFs, that's just how it's gonna be. Anyway,
tell him to come to Glasgow and say that to Stephen and I.
Yep.
keep his GIFs out of Glasgow.
Yeah, you know, I think he's an old man now, so he probably won't be able to get on a plane anytime soon. But there we go. Here's an interesting thing that Mika's talking about. Images are sort of the rise of emojis are obviously supported by the technology of image creation.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with the, you know, augmented reality that we're seeing, that is a form of image. Take a picture, you put some filters on top, you send that. That's going to communicate a very rich message compared to writing text. So again, our recruiters are usually doing this. Probably no one very good right now, but I would say when the next generation of mobile-first recruiters enter the marketplace, it's going to feel fairly native for them.
Yeah, but the thing is, we've got you know, things like InDesign, which are really hard to use, but and they're, you know, built for designers. But then there's things like Canva, which become much easier to use and enable you to create images quite easily. Personally, I just use Microsoft Paint.
You can do a lot. I tell you what, though, the image creation, if it sits on the mobile device, that's where it's going to be. That's where it's going to really work, because the creation, the editing, and the send will be in the same device.
Yeah.
And this is what I think all of these services are going towards. Anything on a desktop that you have to then translate into something that sends, it's going to take too long. Yeah. So you can see here with the Twitter sharing, 50% greater increase in impressions if you use rich media text. Versus text only. That's pretty obvious, right? So, okay, we know about Instagram. I know you hate Instagram, so we'll move past that. Okay. Well, what were we talking about here? Oh. We're still on the pictures. Gaming. Let's talk about gaming, Adam. Where are we with interactive gaming in recruitment? I would say nowhere. But I could be wrong. I know the gaming marketplace is very unique, even as far as the engineering and the development's concerned. So I wonder whether there are gaming sort of recruiters out there that are using interesting things within games to do hiring.
Yeah, I was going to say what Liz said. Arctic Shores is the one that strikes me as being one of the most interesting ones. They're doing some really interesting games to generate an understanding of people's capabilities, so for assessment.
Yes, game-based assessment. I would say that's slightly different from what this slide is trying to represent, which is basic interactive gaming. And are people doing recruiting on there? And actually, now come to think of it, I think there are some good examples of people putting in-game adverts that are actually in the reality of that universe, but still communicating to the audience that they suspect are the right demographic.
All right. Well, you've got SAP's sponsorship. SAP specifically, their employer branding team sponsors one of the big sports leagues. I think it's called esports.
Right. Yep. Esports, actually, I think, that's one of the most watched sports events around, isn't it? It's like overtaken a lot of huge events. So it's something I need to get into. I mean, I don't have the equipment or the time to get involved with gaming, really, but I'm very conscious of the fact that the next generation of workers and employees and so forth are obviously embedded in gaming, and they're going to learn things and communicate in ways that you and I probably don't understand right now. So if we have to stay current, we have to get in there. I mean, look at these curves here.
Yeah,
Fortnite, 250 million users. That's absolutely massive.
Listen, a very good friend of mine was at school with me, and he used to sit and play his Mega Drive, and we'd call him a geek while we were all doing other things. And he now runs the game store for Amazon.
Well, credit to him. Smarter than him. I tell you another aspect of gaming which is important, skills learning. And you look at sort of what people are saying and answer the question, how Fortnite helped you. 50% say learn teamwork skills. 44% say make friends online. 40% improve communication skills, which would surprise probably, you know, us who are now Luddites to this world, but actually you could probably accelerate a lot of personal learning on online gaming, which actually leads us to another point, because I think that Mika talks about this in terms of where people are getting information and knowledge transfer these days, and it isn't through academic learning, it's through YouTube, it is through online self-directed learning, because that's the way in which people want to consume stuff these days.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody I know, she's 22 years old. I watched her. We were talking about something. I watched her go onto YouTube to find the answer, and I was like, "Do you always do that? Go onto YouTube as opposed to go onto Google?" And the answer was yes. Do your friends do that? Yes. Interesting. I've started doing it ever since.
Yep, and it is a huge database, right? People forget it's probably, in terms of the amount of data, the biggest database on the planet. If you want to find, there's somebody somewhere doing a how-to video on it. If you don't know how to do something, just type it into YouTube and you'll get somebody telling you more or less this is how you do it.
It's true. If you find it a challenge to do, somebody else has found it a challenge to do before you, probably.
Yeah, there's actually, I think Tris Revelle came up with a very cool list of YouTube, recruiter-based YouTube channels, massive big list. I should actually somehow integrate that into BrainFeed somewhere. But I did share it in the newsletter, and it was a really good resource. So I'm going to try and pull out and share it into the chat box a bit later as well. Okay, we are running way behind time, so I'm going to fly through this a little bit. Okay, what are we talking about? User overload. Let's talk about that. So you know what this translates to in recruitment? Candidate engagement crisis.
Yeah, massively. You have to work much harder than ever to get people's attention.
Right. So basically everyone is overwhelmed, especially multi-device adults. People watching this are obviously also doing something else. You know, very few people are just focusing on this crowdcast. How do we actually get to the point where we're communicating with new hires? My personal view, I believe it's actually going to be increasingly difficult and probably not very efficient way to do it. So my thinking is that the stand out from the crowd techniques, you know, try and do something particularly interesting, is just adding to the noise. And what you really need to be doing is think about building audience, you know, community building, audience building, network building. That gives you a much better chance of connecting with the person when you need to connect with them. Because if you become a known person in that view, to listen to your message.
I mean, the way I say it a lot is 95% of recruitment marketing's point of sale material. It's for people that are looking for jobs. They'll come to you anyway. You don't need to create any content for them. Create 95% of your content for people that are not looking for jobs. Just be useful and relevant. Skills, industry insights, things like that. That's what people are going to want. They don't care about your employer brand.
Yep. So this is sort of channeling our good friend and much admired Joe Mullins, really, isn't it? It's not about it's creating content for people that are going to be more likely to be interested in your stuff long term, and that's not transactional jobs. Basically, we all know this. We just gotta get better at it. Okay, let's talk about this algorithmic discovery side. We're on to slide 173. So not just about half. Not even halfway. We're not going to make it, Adam. I don't know about.
I've actually sent you a messenger message to say I think we need to split this into two sessions. To be honest.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I can continue. But the bottom line is, let's finish on this algorithmic discovery. How does that impact recruitment? How do recruiters get better at this one single point?
How do recruiters get better at this single point?
Well, yeah, I'm just talking about, so right now, for instance, we're more likely to discover things.
Yeah.
Well, I think the main thing here for me, I mean, it's a bit of a loaded question because in a sense I kind of have a theory on this. And my theory is that we just simply have to learn how these algorithms work. You know, we can't be ignorant of it. And we can't just rely on our great content being surfaced out because it's great content. We need to understand what triggers a viral, what the viral probability of that content might be. So how does it actually get spread? What are the signals it's looking for? And how do we get better at all of it? So yeah, it's a little bit manipulating it, but at the same time as recruiters and marketers, we need to do that.
Well, there's two things I think that's going to happen. The first is that big companies become, you know, continue to dominate because they've got teams that can keep on top of algorithms and things like that. They've got budgets to be able to do it. And then the second thing is that startups make some impact because they can hack. Most mid-market organizations, they're going to have real problems with keeping up with all of this.
That's a very good point. So it might look like a U curve, wouldn't it? The kind of companies that will succeed, early stage startups that are going to be use guerrilla tactics to hack through it, and then the big beast at the end that might have a team
throw money at people or agencies to do it.
I tell you a new discovery I made when I was in Helsinki a couple of weeks ago. I didn't realize LinkedIn had this product, which is to my kind of ignorance really. LinkedIn Elevate. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
Well, it's fine. I mean, it's just amplifying your brand, isn't it? And it's not, LinkedIn has to keep coming up with new ways to make money, but they're probably ways that they actually came up with 10 years ago. They're just on a release kind of drip.
Yeah. So as a quick kind of ender to this conversation, LinkedIn Elevate, and I've never seen it happen, but as it's been described to me by users of the product, it's simply a way where you can mobilize your current employee base to do better content creation, better content sharing. And it seems to be potentially very effective if you've got a bunch of people that are already quite prominent online, and you can enroll them into, you know, supporting your employer branding, you know, recruitment and marketing efforts.
Yeah, it's about enabling advocacy and making that much faster. I mean, just quickly back to the news patterns and amplifying people's own behaviors. Unfortunately, the other thing it does is you get given information that you already know. You get given more information that supports things that you already know. And it's bubbles. It's like bubbles of information. So there's things that you just don't get. You don't get them.
It's
a problem. It exacerbates extremism, and it does all sorts of things that are not very healthy.
I think you're right. We're wrestling with it. How do we do that? I mean, right now it seems that we're inhabiting these bubbles, and it's a competition between the bubbles, as I see it right now, like an existential fight between them, cultural wars, if you will. So that's going to be tough. Is there going to be a technology solution at some point? I hope so. I don't think it's going to be a legislative one. I've seen some really interesting products that are trying to do this, like fact-checking type services, and also contrarian services, where basically if you get a news source, you can ask for a contrary opinion, and then at least you've got the opportunity to see another view. But the issue with those types of tools is it takes really morally driven users, and they're usually of a certain type. So, you know, there's other people that prefer the existential fight, I think. So, you know, we've got to be aware of that also. Right, listen, I think we've got to go because I'm mentally jaded by all of this. I want to thank, I'm not sure this was a successful experiment, but I want to thank everyone who stuck with us, including the 18 people that are still with us on live stream. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this Brain Food Live on Air special. If you haven't read Mary Meeker's monster of a slide deck, I recommend you do that. Let me share it with you right away, as a matter of fact.
Do it on a tablet or a laptop.
Yeah, it's an ugly looking thing, but I tell you, you probably need to read it. It comes out once a year, so make sure you grab it and keep an eye on when this comes out. It does have an impact in recruitment, even though, you know, we haven't been able to get halfway with this one. But anyway,
it will make you, one thing I say, I regularly say this about recruiting brain food, is it'll make you more popular and successful. Reading Mary Meeker's report, it's called just the Internet Trends Report. It will also make you more popular and successful because everything that you need to know about how people use the internet today is in here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, recruiters often have that complaint that they say they're not taken seriously in the office. You know, they're not at top table. They're not knowing this, that, or the other. Well, you know, here's just one slide deck that might help you get there to a certain degree. No excuses. So it's in the chat box there. You can also find it in the recruitment last, but we built a search engine for recruitment. All you need to do is jump on the last shortly in the chat as well. And basically just type in Mary Meeker there and you'll be able to see it. All right, we are out. Have a good week, everybody. We'll be back next week. I think I'm in Portugal, by the way, so I'm probably do a Brain Food Live special from there. But then usual service afterwards. I think that's when we'll have early stage talent and stuff like that. All right, cool. Listen, have a good weekend, everyone.
Cheers, everybody. Bye. Cheers, Randy, by the way. Didn't say hi to you. Bye.